Congratulations!
You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one podcast. Arts and culture podcast, with me, Kate Rhodes.
And me.
That's Maysoon Waswas. This week's episode's going to be a little bit of a Frankenstein.
Yeah, you think so?
Because we got our Cliff Hengst interview, very excited.
Oh, I love Cliff Hengst.
And we went
Was that awkward when I was like, Cliff, I've wanted to be your secret best friend for years now?
Did you say that to him? I don't remember that at all. It wasn't on the audio file.
I think it was off. Oh, I guess it was off mic.
Well, I don't think that's weird.
It was funny because it actually made me think of you. I was like, I'm kind of acting like Kate right now.
I think it's fine to be open with people.
I just think he's so awesome.
And we also have a little on the scene audio from us going to the various art fairs. Well, two art fairs. I didn't make it to Art Market, Maysoon.
Well, I'm not sure if you missed anything.
Hey-o!
No, actually, I saw someone posted some pictures from Art Market. It looked like there was some good work.
And I was a little sad.
Of course there's going to be good work there. It's just such a shit show as far as, like, I feel like I'm in, like, a cattle house or something in those places where it's this huge, huge warehouse of art and people being shuffled and shuffled through.
It's not the display, Maysoon. It's the economic and political implications of what you're witnessing.
Okay.
Don't you think? If you were just at a show in a warehouse that was big and giant like that with movable walls,
I'd probably still kind of hate it.
It's not because the rich people are coming in and having an art mall.
The art mall is disgusting.
Anyhow, didn't make it to that. So here's some snippets of our little experiences that day. Okay, we're here at Parking Lot Art Fair talking to Christian Adicky Davies. As I mentioned, we're here at the Parking Lot Art Fair. You are displaying some of your art here in the back of a hatchback.
Yes.
Would you call that a hatchback?
I would call it a station wagon. It's a estate car, if we were in England. But it has a hatch.
And you were saying that this is your favorite art fair ever in the history of time and space.
It is kind of the best thing. It feels like it's been here forever. It's sort of like a company picnic if your company is art and you're hanging out with all your best friends. There's dancing and there's people barbecuing and there's day drinking. And there's a lot of art and bewildered people driving through. It's kind of great.
Thank you so much.
No problem. Only 25 pancakes.
Talking to John Hirschend here at the Thing Quarterly car. Did you want to make any kind of statement?
Yes. We're only making 25 pancakes because that is what the city ordinance requires.
Because you don't have a food handler's card?
Exactly. So any more than that, you go beyond being a picnic. You become something else.
I kind of feel like you should have made them a little bigger.
Well, if we did that, we'd run out. Yeah. I mean, 25 big ones could be good, but then I'd have to make extra batter.
What if you made 25 of the world's largest pancakes? Would that still fall within the realm of non-commercial?
I think that's a good idea. I'm going to do that next time. Maybe I'll do it tomorrow, because I can just do this whenever I want. Yeah.
It's true. I love it.
Yeah. I mean, that's the idea, right?
Okay, we're here at the Parking Lot Art Fair, which I think has been pretty successful.
There have been some people here, yes.
Talking to Eric Bakke.
Bakke, yeah.
And could you tell us a little bit about your project today?
All right, so today I have a project that started with an investigation of black flags in general. So I have a black flag over my car, and then I have a signboard which has on one side the black flag is altered by ISIS with a phrasing about Muhammad that they put on it, which identifies it as the ISIS black flag. And then on the other side, it's not a black flag, but it's the CIA logo. And then there on the side of that signboard are two other smaller signs that say recruiting today.
How has the reception been?
One of the first responses I didn't hear directly, it was a call to the police. And the police came, and they were a little hot under the collar at first. And I explained to them that my project was about visual culture and not about recruiting for ISIS. And still the police officer, Bonner, I believe was his name, said that he was filing a report with the FBI, and he gave me my FBI report number.
Really?
I wonder how that would have gone had you not been passing for white.
That's a very good question. I think it could have gone worse.
I would definitely agree with that. Alrighty. Mamie? Well, I gotta say, you're the first person we've ever had on the show who has been actively involved with an FBI investigation.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. About to leave the parking lot at Art Fair out here. What is this, the marina?
This is Fort Mason.
Gotta say, I loved it.
It was really fun.
Definitely a good time.
We're here talking to a friend of the show, Jennifer Brandon, artist, arts educator. Gotta say, definitely lived up to my expectations. There was a strange, bizarre performance art, things I didn't quite understand, things that looked dangerous to your body and mind. The FBI showed up. Police came, reported things to the FBI. Thoughts from you, Mamie?
I thought it was really fun. I mean, I think I was expecting it to be what it was, to be sort of wild. Not wild, but just kind of a free-for-all. Who the hell knows what's going to happen here? There was no nudity. That was maybe a little slightly surprising. I kind of wanted to see more. I thought maybe there'd be more performance.
Well, it's still going on for a bit yet. There could be some. Yeah. I mean, I did see some dicks, but not live ones.
Okay, I didn't see any of those.
Boob drawings. Oh, yep.
There were some books with lots of boob drawings and other sorts of drawings. Yeah, no, it was great. Mm-hmm. I hope they do it again in the same location next year.
And why do you say that?
Why do I
you
say
heard,
that?
Yeah, you heard talk.
Like you were worried about them moving
no,
it?
No, because I just feel like when things become successful, everyone then wants to move to the Mission. And I'm just like, don't move it to the Mission. I think it's actually really great in this location.
Plus, I think like its proximity to Art Market is also kind of set up some interesting energy of the kind of like anarchist, contrarian, punk artists outside the establishment.
Yeah.
That's what I really liked about it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It's funny because I wonder how many people in that lot were actually going to Art Market. You know, if they were just going for the lot or if they were, you know.
Oh, yeah, like people on the way.
Yeah. Well, cause for us, for example, we're not going to Art Market. We like just went for the parking lot art fair.
I only heard a couple people say that they were interested in or just going to pop in for a minute to the market. Yeah. No, most folks were just there for the fun and the giggles.
Next up on our art fair day is going to the startup art fair. Do you guys have any expectations?
I'm just really curious. I think I'm trying to go in with an open mind. I know some folks that are involved.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk to the people you know, actually.
Yeah. Kate Rhodes here. We're at the Startup Art Fair in room 209 with Chris Thorson.
It's going good so far. I think we're about 30 minutes into the day. People have come in to the room and reacted in various ways.
I think that the work you've made has lent itself very well to this venue.
Yeah,
I agree. That is why I was interested in participating, to have a spot to like blend in perfectly to the hotel.
Are these ceramic pieces?
They're cast hydrocal, they're basically a mold making process, and then like a harder version of plaster of Paris is basically what hydrocal is.
And they're things that kind of blend in, like we've got a sock on the floor. Total Trump Loy. Did I say Trump Loy right?
You did. Yes.
Thank you.
It was impressive.
Thank you. And you've got, I especially love the cast t-shirt with Che Guevara.
Yeah, I thought that was appropriate for this venue.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well,
he gets to greet the visitors along with me. He's actually better at it.
That's fantastic. Okay, well, we'll let you get back to the people because I think I'm scaring them away.
No, it's the condition of the room. It's frightful.
Okay. Talk?
All right. We're here at the Root Division room here at the Startup Art Fair, and I was very surprised and happy to see Amy Cancelmo, now two-timer on the show. Would you like to say a little bit about everything in the world?
We're really, really grateful to Startup for making us the beneficiary, and also to Art Market and the San Francisco Charity Foundation auction. Chandra Cerrito actually donated a piece of work that all the proceeds will go to Root Division, which is amazing. And we also just launched the public part of our capital campaign on Indiegogo. We have a big goal for our new building, which is $850,000. We've already raised $550,000 of that, which is incredible. And now we are reaching out to the community to raise $50,000 to help us build out the space, the classrooms, the studios, get the good lighting in there, all kinds of good things. If you go to our website, rootdivision.org/Indiegogo2015, or if you just go to our landing page, you can find it there. We would love support at any level. We have really amazing perks. So check those out. Thanks for your support.
Well, thanks so much. I'm really excited to see you in particular because you're great.
Thanks.
And Root Division is great. So listeners, get on that. We're in room 306, Mitra Fabian. And it's day two for you artists of the Startup Fair. Just wanted to check in, see how it's going.
It's going well. I'm totally exhausted, but it's been a really great experience. People have been mostly pretty well behaved, and I've gotten some really great feedback and a couple of sales. So, I'm pretty happy.
So, overall, positive experience.
Overall, a positive experience, although I have to say my sympathies are greatly increased for all the gallerists who do these fairs. It is so much work. It is, it's really intense.
How's it been? Because we talked to Steve and Ray when they were organizing it, and we brought up the idea that, like, at a traditional art fair, the gallerist is taking the brunt of the shitty part of art fair, and here it's just straight coming right at the artist. I don't know if you've had any feelings about taking on kind of a different relationship maybe to the work of having to kind of represent it like a gallerist might.
It's certainly been an education, and I can't say that I would jump to do it again just because it is so much work. But I think it's been worth it just in terms of how much exposure you get. And I think we're really fortunate to have Ray and Steve organizing it because it's been incredibly professional from the start, and they've been great to work with. So
no big dramas happening.
And the only big drama is that we keep losing power. But I think that it's just, there's got to be one glitch, and there could be worse glitches.
Oh, could be fires.
Yeah.
And there are none.
No fires so far.
Thank you so much for chatting with us.
No problem. My pleasure.
Impressions after walking out the door. It, again, was about what I expected. It wasn't a total travesty, as I think it was feeling like it might be back when everybody was freaking out about it.
When we first got here, it was the day was just starting, so there wasn't a lot of people necessarily swarming around. But as we were leaving, I feel like a lot of the rooms were pretty full. Mm-hmm. It seemed like a few people had purchased things. It's weird because I felt like I was still acting as if I was an art fair where you walk in and you circle the room and you just walk out and leave, there were moments where I wanted to keep reminding myself that the people in the rooms aren't the gallerists or the artists themselves, and that just sort of trying to be mindful of like being a little bit more friendly, conversational, a little less like aloof. I gotta get out of here, I hate the work, I wanna leave, you know? More like, oh, hi, great, thank you. You know, just trying to be a little bit more friendly.
Got a nice grilled cheese after. That was probably the highlight for me.
That was delicious. I'm still regretting the spiced jelly.
Jennifer and I forgot the fucking jam. Do you think they'll do it again next year?
I think it depends on how much they're able to make back. But I mean, the thing is that all business ventures, which this is one, it always takes more than a year. You know, like you have to put multiple years behind it to see if it's actually going to be successful. There's a, it has to build.
But you got to think there's got to be like some level of success that you have to attain the first time to be like, okay, well, if we keep going, like I could see us like really getting rolling with this.
Mm-hmm. There needs to be a little bit more of like a party atmosphere going on in there. Mm-hmm. And I think, I know last night during the VIP or whatever reception that was, there was performance happening in the pool, and I think there was probably more of that feeling. Maybe that's just like a daytime versus nighttime thing. I think they should have like the drinks like front and center.
Yeah, I mean, they were tucked off to the side.
I mean, the thing is, like, when you're talking about selling or making money, a fundraiser in any way, shape, or form, it's always about, like, get those fucking people boozed up.
I'm thinking back to the spaces that I liked the most, like Chris Thorson.
Yeah.
Who used the space in a really smart way. It was an extension of the work.
Yeah.
And that was really interesting. There was another artist that used a closet in a really interesting way. Felt integrated. Mm-hmm. And those were moments that I liked and I would like to see more of. But then that's a different thing. That's a show.
There were definitely some artists that were better at engaging the people coming in than others.
Yeah.
And I think some people have like reps with them,
yeah.
Like other people, you know, taking over that whole thing. It reminded me a lot of just open studios. Just because the artist is in there, the work's in there, you can't be real. You can't, like, turn to your friend and be like, look at this garbage. You know what I mean?
Right. Because in open studios, artists are doing the same thing, right? Where you come in, they have something, fruit and cheese to eat, and they've got artist statements out. Let me know if you have any questions. These things are for sale. Here are some prints for sale, which is always, like, that always makes me uncomfortable when I'm all of a sudden immediately given, like, here's what's for sale. Here's the price list. I'm like, I don't want to buy anything. I'm afraid now.
Yeah.
But that's just me. You know. There's probably some people who are like, great. Let's find out what the prices are. Let's get down to it.
Yeah. That's true. In a department store, I don't want anyone to help me either. I don't want to be directed to things.
I don't either.
Want to sign up for things when prompted. I run the other way.
I'm just thinking about how this could become something more like parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, could people on their own accord just rent out a whole fucking hotel? Or what would that look like? I don't know. I was just thinking about the difference between the two. Because they're both artists representing their work.
Yeah, I think it's as soon as you start getting a lot of money involved, it's like, okay, we can't just fuck around and do really experimental shit, because we got to be making this money back.
Totally. Yeah, I agree.
It's the pressure on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, well, thank you so much, Jennifer, for going around with us today, and not to mention driving us to this. And we treasure you, and congratulations.
You're adorable.
We're here at Muddy Waters in the Mission District of San Francisco, California, talking to Bay Area luminary, performance artist, comedian, living legend, Cliff Hengst.
Hello.
I'd be curious to know how you sort of define yourself as an artist, I guess, in the city.
I started off as a painter, and then I moved over to performance at the Art Institute, and that kind of opened the whole world up for me. And then I was doing that for a while straight, but I've gone back to painting and drawing in my private practice, and I do other things as well. I do embroidery, and I've also been dealing with comedy. Maybe I was just thinking now embroidery and comedy together. That would be weird. But I don't like to kind of define myself into one or the other, because I just do a lot of different things, and depends on how I feel.
You're from LA, and that you have a background in the Jehovah's Witnesses.
Yes, I was raised a Jehovah's Witness from when I was a small child and up to probably age 23 or 24 even. But I was going out door to door and witnessing, preaching the good news and knocking on people's door and, you know, doing everything. I was really involved in the religion. But their views on homosexuality made me start questioning everything, and eventually I completely dropped out. And that was a big, heavy thing for me.
I also saw in a video that you were on about the Mission School. I think it was for SF MoMA's Fertile Ground show. And you were saying that part of the reason why you moved to San Francisco was to be gay.
And that's why I moved to the Bay Area too, kind of. And I just really loved that. I don't know if you wanted to expand on that or anything.
Oh sure. When you're a Jehovah's Witness, you have to kind of, they take the Bible literally. And, you know, one of the things that the Bible says is, you know, there was Leviticus 18:3, you always throw that scripture out at you. And so I knew once I would come out of the closet, I would have to completely get away from my family, because they do this thing called disfellowshipping, where they basically turn their back on you. They publicly shame you in the congregation during the meeting, and then everybody turns their back on you. And I knew that once that happened, I had to get out, because I was like, my family's going to turn their back on me. My friends are going to turn their back on me. My whole world basically was flipped around. So I kind of knew this was coming. I mean, I kind of knew I was gay since I was like 8. But, you know, I didn't do anything about it, And finally, when I came to the point where I realized I'm gay, I was like, I need an exit strategy. So I had a teacher, I was going to Pasadena City College, and I had an art teacher there, and he was like, hey, have you ever thought of going to art school? And I never really seriously thought about going to art school. It was always kind of a hobby. They don't really encourage you to go to college when you're a Jehovah's Witness. They want you to be involved in the full-time ministry. But I was like, oh, that's not going to happen. So when I moved from L.A. to San Francisco, I said I was going to go to art school, and which is true, but I was really going to be a big gay fag. And I met these other people who turned out to be my family. I consider them my real family now. Sorry, family. But they were the ones that were there for me. They were that structure that I needed. And I'm still friends with a lot of them. And, San Francisco was that thing for me.
So moving to San Francisco and going to art school, do you feel like that's the gayest thing ever?
Pretty much. You know. And then to move to San Francisco when I did, like, at the, like, when the AIDS crisis was really kicking in, I moved here in 87, and, you know, I'm like, hey, man. I remember the first gay parade I ever went to was flatbed trucks full of guys dancing, and then 20 guys in wheelchairs with That's What Friends Are For playing behind them. Then another flatbed truck with guys in shorts, and then 20 more guys getting pushed in wheelchairs. It was really fucking tough and hard. And then when I moved to San Francisco, I got a job at Walgreens and started working in the pharmacy. First I worked on the floor, the midnight shift, and then I got a job in the pharmacy, and the pharmacy was like pretty much ground zero for AIDS patients. 1/3 of the AZT out of the United States came out of that pharmacy. People were dying all over the place. You know, like that, just dropping. Yeah. And guys totally don't remember that at all. It's like enough time has passed where there's a whole generation of guys that don't realize.
So what was art school like at that time?
Like I said, I went in as a painter, but I could just tell that what I was doing was kind of half-assed. I'll be honest. I wasn't really feeling the painting. It's been like, okay, I'm just going to be honest about it. Oh, sorry, Pagan Brook. I harbor no resentment toward you anymore. But it was like I could tell like my interest was waning. I took one performance class with Tony Labatt, and that was it. Pretty much that changed everything. He did. He really flipped me. And after this, I was like, fuck it. I don't want to do any more painting. Not right now. I want to just start diving into this thing called performance, which is I kind of was doing in junior college, but I didn't know the history of it. I didn't know what I was actually doing was performance. Yeah. We were doing stuff in nightclubs in LA, and you know, we thought we were just having fun, but I guess in a weird way it was a performance. Yeah.
I saw you do this great performance with Southern Exposure a few years back when they were doing a series of short performances out of people's homes with partnering with Machine Projects from LA. Where Cliff walked up a very, probably one of the steepest hills in San Francisco. and sang through a megaphone the song I Left My Heart in San Francisco. And it was like, it's like, I feel like your performance is just really like, there's like such intense humor, but then also this like real sadness and almost despair.
That was wild. And that was where I first met Mark Allen.
Oh, really?
From Machine Project. That was the first time we met. Yeah, we clicked instantly, and we've done several projects together.
Did you do the Whitney Houston project with him?
I did.
Could you talk a little bit more about that Whitney Houston tour?
I was actually participating in a show where all these artists had to pick a landmark in L.A. and kind of do a piece about it. And I'm driving around L.A., and I can't, for the life of me, figure out what I want to do. It's so big. I couldn't pick one particular building to kind of want to do something about it. But oddly enough, in the apartment I was staying at, Mark Allen's artist apartment, there was a Vanity Fair about the last hours of Whitney Houston. And she died at the Beverly Wilshire on Wilshire Boulevard. And so when we were driving around, I'm like, oh, there's where Whitney died. And we kept going down Wilshire Boulevard, and I was like, you know, it should be about Wilshire Boulevard. I'm sure it's got this crazy history to it. And then I was like, oh, what about if the ghost of Whitney Houston and like jumps into me as I'm giving a straight tour about Wilshire Boulevard? And then it kind of got crazier and absurd. Scott's like, oh, yeah, totally do that. So then I threw the idea past Mark. Mark's like, oh, yeah, do it. Go ahead. So he rented this tour bus, this double-decker tour bus, and I did all this research, and I got all the landmarks down on Wilshire Boulevard. It was amazing history. But, like, kind of going in and out of this persona as Whitney Houston. And, I don't look anything like Whitney Houston, but my fabulous friend Gerald made me this huge gold gown, and I got this wig. And I kind of really got into it. I would lip-sync her songs, and I tied in this kind of story about Whitney's life in Wilshire Boulevard. And it started at the Wilshire Boulevard, and it ended in MacArthur Park, which was really great. It's just a straight shot. And I got off the bus there and ran into MacArthur Park and disappeared. That was the end of the tour.
So you're also a comedian.
I have been doing comedy stuff. I guess that is a comedian. It's weird to... I'm having trouble embracing it because I come from such a performance thing. I was like, after a while, I'm like, I don't want to do any more performance stuff. I just want to really get into comedy. But then, you know, that's a whole other world. It's a whole other world of, like, you know, guys doing a thing, you know, and I want to be in between both worlds. I want to be a comedian in the performance department, and I want to be a performer and a performance artist in the comedy department.
Can you do that, though? I mean, I could see some of your performance pieces in, like, a comedy venue.
Yeah, it's a struggle, but, you know, I kind of have to do that. I'm not much of a joke guy, so my humor kind of comes from other things, and those other things are usually performance-based things. I wish I could just sit and write jokes and then just tell jokes with a mic, but I've realized it's never going to happen. It's not my thing, so I have to rely on other things that make me laugh to kind of work out the comedy thing.
More like storytelling or like prop comedy, like Carrot Top?
No, but I have done prop comedy before, and it was not good. It was not good. No. I did this years ago. I did this thing at when it was Josie's Juice Bar. It used to be this amazing club called Josie's Juice Bar in the Castro, and they had an open mic night, and I did this gay Klansman bit where I put a pink pillowcase on my head and said, like, he's hot. Oh, he's hot. And the comedian at the time, she must have thought it was so terrible, because she just, while the pillowcase was on my head, she grabbed it off, put all my stuff in the bag, and handed it to me and said my name and started clapping, like, just scooted me off the stage. And I was always like, oh, I'm coming back. I want to come back. And it took me like 10 years to get back on the stage again after being traumatized by that, but it was worth it. I learned. I learned my lesson. And that lesson is you use one prop. One prop.
I feel like art audiences are a little more forgiving of, like, they can have, like, long pauses and parts that maybe aren't totally funny and still, like, be kind of into it.
Oh, yeah. And they will stay there for the long run, no matter what. They have their patience to sit and watch it all the way through. With comedy, they're like, I've had a couple of drinks in me. Get the fuck out of my face. That's like, wow. You know, it's kind of refreshing. Like, whoa, can't bullshit my way out of this.
I just sort of had like a, not flashback, just a moment of like remembering a performance I saw that you did at SF MoMA when they did that series of stage presence. Is that what it was called? It almost haunts me, actually, is when you went through the audience and inhaled everyone's breath in order to fill a balloon. Was it a balloon?
Yeah. I did this suicide piece where I poured all this soda into a bucket and drank from it. Yeah. You know, a suicide. Yeah. And then I did the inhaling piece. And that was great because I had done that before, but I had never had such, out of all the things I did in that week there, that was the one with the most adverse reaction. This one woman, while I went up to her, she's like, please don't. Like, I clearly violated her space. And I just felt like, after she said that, I don't want to do this with you.
Was she one of the earlier people? Because I think it was sort of like, there were a lot of people in the audience that were unfamiliar with your work. Yeah. Or what you were, like, there, a lot of your friends were also there, but, or people that at least knew you and trusted you to do whatever and not feel...
And I did it to some of my friends, but a lot of it was the strangers. I just went right up to them as close as I could. And while they sat there looking at me, like I was really close to them, like almost kissing close, yeah. I inhaled their breath and then put it in this balloon and then taped the balloon to the edge of the podium. So they had to kind of stare at their soul being trapped in this balloon. Yeah, it was really kind of it's a great thing to do at the beginning because then you're like, people are like, well... It's an icebreaker, and you either like that piece or you don't.
I don't know. I really appreciate being put in these positions that I'm so unfamiliar with. I don't know. As long as I trust you to a certain degree, I guess I'm at SF MoMA. I know they're not going to like do anything where I'm going to get like shot on purpose.
Peed on.
Huh?
Or peed on.
Well, probably, I don't know. Probably not peed on there, but...
But would you have been comfortable with that?
I probably wouldn't have wanted to be peed on, but I'm not into bodily fluids. But
yeah, I was going to say that seems to be your Achilles heel.
That's fine with me. What?
I was going to say that's your Achilles heel.
Yeah.
It's the bodily fluids.
You know, Jennifer Locke peed in my mouth once as a performance.
Please go on.
Tell us more.
Well, we were in this bar, and it was performance night, and Jennifer and I did these performances, and one of them was we took pictures of each other's buttholes with a Polaroid, and we threw them in the audience. And she would take a picture of my butthole and throw it in the audience. And at the end of the night, all hers were gone, and it was just my buttholes just laying around on the ground. But she had this thing where she's like, Cliff, I want to pee in your mouth. And I was like, oh, my God, you know. I was like, well, okay, I guess. Let's do something. She said, I'll drink lots of water. Believe me, I'm thinking about this a lot when you want to do some. So I did this ode to my grandmother where I was reaching out to her like I was crying out to her like I had missed her. And while I was doing that, I was laying on the ground. Jennifer Locke just hiked up her skirt, squatted right over my face, and just pissed right in my mouth. And I was trying to, you know, continue on with the dialogue of this thing. And, you know, she's peeing a lot. And so, like,
She drank a lot of water.
She just emptied it all into me. And I was like, and I remember just like being out of it and just doing this piece. And then afterwards, people just like, just like stay away from me, like just I can't even talk to you right now. I don't even want to deal with you. But there are plenty of my buttholes out there.
So oftentimes on the show, Kate and I will do a Bay Area versus LA segment. I thought it'd be fun to ask you what your, I don't know.
Yeah, especially since you're from LA.
What the values?
Which one's better? Which would be the Bay Area?
I don't know, man. I mean, it's so hard because, you know, LA's got its own thing going on right now. There's a lot of art that's exciting there. People go and see the work. But, you know, there's also phoniness to it that never kind of disappears. I think it's the whole entertainment thing that is the big thing. That's their tech, is entertainment. And entertainment is all based on, like, facades. So everyone's really good at their facades there. So there's this constant phoniness there that I just, especially after being away from it, that I don't buy anymore. I'm like, oh, yeah, I kind of see right through that. But, you know, San Francisco is beautiful, but invaded by all these horrible people now.
You said it.
It's just horrible people that are not contributing anything to any kind of culture. They're just taking. They got theirs. You know, I got mine. That should be tattooed on all their foreheads because they got theirs. They're making so much money. They're not thinking about culture. They could care less about culture. They stare at their hands and their phones. They don't want to, they come from other parts of the United States, but don't want to do with anybody that is from here. They all stick to themselves. It's a very weird place to be at right now. People don't, you know, we're not even talking about the money part. It's just this weird social experiment that is. And then, you know, I'm getting older now, and so there's always that. There's like that. I'm being pushed aside now. I'm being irrelevant. I'm not only are people not looking at me, they don't see me at all anymore. So there's that whole thing. And then, you know, it's a very weird time to be in the city. And then the differences of money. There are still so many people that are homeless and poor in this city. I mean, there's camps now.
It's more visible now than it
has. Visible. There's entire camps of people that live together and they move from camp to camp now. You know, that never really happened. There was always like one or two people solitary. There's groups of people now that are nomads. They don't have any place to stay. And yet, you know, there's still these rich people coming in and stepping over the poor. It's where there's no middle class anymore. It's all, you're either really rich or you're poor, on your way to being poor. That's weird. It's not a nurturing culture.
But they got that in LA too.
They sure do, by the bowls full. And it's funny that, like, obscene wealth is still kind of poo-pooed at, but in L.A., that's a whole other story. It's like, go for it. Embrace it. Oh, yeah. Just pour it all over you. That's, yeah.
The Bay wins. Okay. So I was just going to ask one last thing, which is not a real question, but I just wanted to know if you had anything else that you wanted listeners to know or anything you wanted to say to them.
I still believe in the power of art. I do. I still, at the end of the day, believe in it. And I will till the day I die. It's all I have.
Thank you so much for saying that.
Congratulations.
And thank you so very much for meeting with us and talking to us today.
It was completely my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Anything you want to say to sum it all up there, Maymay?
I still don't like art fairs. Just summing it up for you, Kate.
Still love the parking lot art fair, though. Great experience there. And it turns out that when we had that one journalist come by while I was looking
through... Guess who that was? Sam Whiting.
Whiting? Sure was. Wish we would have picked his brain
Isn't
a little bit.
Isn't that funny? I looked him up because, as soon as the article came out, I'm like, I bet you that was Sam Whiting.
We need to talk to that guy. That's the do-re-mi guy who wouldn't shut up about Catherine Clark's long legs.
I don't want to talk to that guy.
We got a lot of feedback, a little bit, a lot for us compared to the zero we usually get.
I thought we got a lot of feedback.
Got a lot of feedback this last week, so we'll be addressing all of that in our next episode. Thank you to everyone who wrote in and talked in and hugged us. I enjoyed all the hugs equally.
That's nice. Did you get some hugs?
You know I got some hugs.
I didn't get any hugs.
You got hugs up the ass.
Whoa. Can you hug my inner ass?
Congratulations. You made it through another episode of Congratulations Pine Tree.
Can you do some like auto-tuning on that?
Yeah.
Let's start mixing that up a little bit.
Oh, hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Thank you for listening to the show, and we'll see you again, and we won't see you again next week.
Yep, we won't see ya, but we do love ya.